Guys, are ready to talk about marriage? There's one or two that's ready. Okay, what we're talking about is what your parents never told you about marriage. I don't know about you, I had great parents, but they didn't really teach me necessarily from the scriptures about marriage. In other words, what it's like to have a godly marriage and what God calls us to in marriage. And so that's what this series is about. Is how to have a godly marriage. And I think everyone wants the fairy tale marriage. Everyone wants, you see it in the movies constantly. There's the happily ever after. Somehow they never have problems. Somehow they never have children that give them problems. Somehow it's just always romantic and everything is just too sweet and too wonderful. And obviously marriage is awesome. But like anything else, like a garden, you can have a great garden if you work in the garden. The more you take your hand off of the garden, the worse the garden grows. Okay? And the more you want the garden back in shape, the more work it will take to get it back in shape. But if you're constantly looking after your garden and you keep your hand and you fertilize and you mow the lawn and you trim the little thingies and what have you, the garden is beautiful. Marriage is the same. I know that some have felt a little bit overwhelmed. Some of the singles felt like, whew, this is like hardcore stuff. Can it ever be done? Yes, it can. With God's help, anything is possible. And what the Bible teaches is if we hold to the scriptures, you'll have a wonderful marriage. If we hold to the scriptures, if we constantly go back to the scriptures and what the Bible teaches on marriage. So that's sort of the one field. I know one of the other fields that word on the street as with last time's class, when we looked at the role of the husband and the role of the wife, what does a godly husband look like? What does a godly wife look like? I think sometimes what we do is we look at that and we say, impossible. I'm not even going to try. No, actually, that's what the Bible calls us to be. So it is not a good idea. It is the biblical standard. In other words, if I'm a disciple of Jesus, if I call myself a follower of Christ, then I need to follow the Bible's way of marriage. And when I'm born again, what I'm saying is that the old life, my way of doing it, is now gone, and I'm taking on and embracing a new life, which is the biblical way of marriage. Challenging, yes. Different than what we might have grown up with? Absolutely. Does it work? Completely. Okay. So just to sort of clear up those couple of things. My wife was going to teach with me tonight. We have a two-year-old. We have plenty of kids, but one of them is two. And she has tonsillitis, so she's at home with her. But I will be telling you what she would have said. I don't know how many, this is now a highly intensive one, this, but I don't know how many of you own one of these. This is a first aid kit. Who has a first aid kit like this at home, or maybe a baby version of it? Okay, we've got two, three good people. I mean, you get tornadoes in this guy. There's all kind of, I don't know, clearly I don't have one. I asked them to get me one just for the sermon. Here's something that I think when you get hurt, you put it on you. But these are usually good to have. Have them in the back of your car. Certainly have them at a church. Who knows what you guys are going to be up to here in the fellowship. But it's always good to have a first aid kit. And what happens, especially if you have young children and one of the kids fall and there's blood and what have you, what do? You run for your little first aid kit. Some of us have it in kit format. Some of us have it somewhere up in a closet, what have you. But there's some form of first aid kit where you know, this is what I need to go to. Now, in conflict situations, we all need to have a first aid kit ready. You can't end the conflict not know where the first aid kit is. You cannot end the conflict wonder, like me, what is in the actual kit. You need to have a prepared emergency kit. And for Lisa and myself, that is what we have sort of tried to do over the years, is put together for ourselves an emergency kit. Because when you're in conflict, there's usually, I don't know about you guys, but there's usually a bit of emotion involved. And you can turn into someone that's maybe a little bit more on the aggressive side. And so then you need to be able to know, let me yank out the kit. What needs to be in this kit? That's what I want to talk about tonight. Now, I'm going to be sharing about two types of kits that we need to have. One I call the initiator's kit. And the initiator's kit is you're about to bring up something. As you are the initiator of possible conflict. So that's the initiator's kit. And we need to initiate. We need to talk. Conflict's normal. Okay, we'll have conflict. That's all part of life. So one is the initiator's kit. The other kit, the second kit that we'll look at a little bit later and talk about a little bit more as we unpack things, is the responder's kit. So in other words, I'm about to bring up something with my wife. Before I do, I need to get my kit. I need to put my kit under my arm. I need to know what's in my kit. And I need to be ready before I initiate what I want to talk about with what's inside of this kit. Now, my wife, she might be surprised by what I bring up. So what she needs is she also needs a kit. She needs a responder's kit. In other words, she's going to have to respond to that which I have mentioned. Okay, so it's the responder's kit. What I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to share with you some biblical principles of what can be in this kit. What is in my or our kit does not have to be in yours. The purpose of tonight is not to tell you do this. The purpose of tonight is to think about what needs to be in your kit in order for you to resolve conflict not only in a godly manner, but in a fruitful manner, where you actually love each other more afterwards and not less. Does that make sense? So, let us respond with the initiator's kit. Now, we have taught this principle to couples that we try and help for many years. And yet, usually when there is conflict, then one of the first questions I ask is, did you remember the emergency kit? And then you can see the big eyes, and like everyone knows what I'm talking about, but we certainly didn't remember it. And usually number one for me in the emergency kit is you have to remember when you're in your initiator kit. In other words, I'm about to bring up something with my wife. You're about to bring up something with your husband or a child or a colleague. These principles apply throughout life, but we are talking about in the context of marriage. I need to remember who the enemy is. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, it says, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." Who's the enemy? It says the dark forces of evil. Satan is the enemy. The Bible calls him the accuser. The book of John talks about him as the father of lies. He is the enemy. He is your common enemy. What you have to remember when you're unhappy about something or when you're about to enter conflict is your spouse is not the enemy. Unless, of course, your spouse is the devil. Strike that from the record. Strike that. Take it off the recording. Okay. Your spouse, this is key. Even if you just remember this tonight, let me tell you, it will take you far away. Your spouse is not the enemy. My temptation when Lisa and I are in conflict is to make her the enemy. She is hurting me. She is hurting our marriage. She wants to destroy. He wants to destroy our marriage. No. Satan wants to destroy your marriage. And every time that you make your spouse the enemy, Satan wins. And so what you have to remember in the initiator kit, I'm about to bring up something with my spouse, is you have to remember who the enemy is. And you have to remember that it's not about win or lose here. If one of you guys in the conflict wins and the other one loses, then you've both lost because your marriage is lost. The idea is not to outsmart each other. The idea is to outsmart Satan. So in the initiator kit, I want to bring up something with my spouse. I have to remember, with boyfriend, with colleague, with whoever, the first thing that I have to remember is, as I'm seeing this person's face in front of me and I'm throwing darts at it, at the photo, put another photo up. Take your wedding photo off. Don't throw darts at the poor soul. Put Satan up. I know some of you might say, oh, that sounds very extreme. It happens. It's happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to many of us that are married. You make your spouse the enemy instead of Satan. So number one is an initiated kit. Just remember who the enemy is. Number two, in conflict when you're hyper-emotional. Be self-controlled and alert. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, we're going to look at a number of passages, says, be self-controlled and alert. Why? Your enemy, remember who the enemy is, not your spouse. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Who is the devil looking at or for to devour? He is looking for those who are not self-controlled and who are not alert. So it says, be self-controlled and alert. Satan is looking for ideal situations in conflict where the initiator, and the responder as well, but where the initiator is not self-controlled and alert. Now, this can be fairly hard in the heat of the moment. Because in the heat of the moment, the emotions are flying high. Well, what happened with Lisa and myself, and I'll sort of share both ways, is, and it's a pity she can't be here to sort of tell about me. But what would happen to us, and I'm sure none of the men or women can relate to what I'm about to say, but Lisa is a little bit slower to get into the car than what I am. Meaning that if we need to be somewhere, I see Mario is it's like, if we need to be somewhere, and I'm ready, the motor is running, and she said it's only going to be 30 seconds or so, she's just quickly, and I'm sitting there, and it feels like hours go by. At that moment, I am the perfect prey for Satan. Because what happens is by the time that she gets into the car, I'm juiced up, and it's not for Jesus. And what I've had to learn, this learning was through the error of my ways, I had to learn that in that moment, the best thing is to not say anything. The best thing is to treat her with love and kindness. First, get my emotions under control. And on another day, when everyone's at peace, to mention it. But not in the moment. If you mention it in the moment, you become a prey. Elisa and I, years ago, and it was actually a couple that's here tonight at their wedding, and I won't say their name so they don't know what happened prior to their wedding. But we had to get to the wedding. I was doing the wedding. And I said, sweetie, we got to go. Sweetie. I said, sweetie, we can't be late for the wedding. I'm doing the wedding. We can't have the bride there waiting and I'm not there to say hello. We have to go. And so obviously, I mean, different things happened, this, that. Eventually, she got in the car, and I'm furious. And I said, this is not working. This is not working. And so we argued from the house to the wedding. On the way, I realized that I didn't even bring a Bible. Arrived there 1 minute before the bride to speak on agape love. Unconditional love. When we're emotional, Christ's likeness goes out of the door. We have to be self-controlled. That situation could have played out. You know what? It wasn't my wife's fault. It was me. I'm the one that caused it. Sure, could she have been on time? Yes, but who made this into a disaster? It was me because I couldn't control myself. It usually happens in one or two ways in marriages. Either one, something like that where you worked up, boom. Other times, for some that are slower processors, you mull it over. Day in, day out. Week in, week out. It's not that you're trying to be difficult, you're just a slow processor. So, a week in, 2 weeks in, a month in, 2 months in, suddenly the dots align for you. And you get it. And so now you're going to go over to your spouse and you're going to explain to them in 5 minutes what it is that they're doing wrong that took you 2 months to figure out. Why? Because you lack self-control and you become a perfect enemy. So what do you need to have in your kit, in your initiator's kit? You have to remember, be self-controlled. There's some great scriptures at that time to think about in the Bible. It talks about 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5. Take captive every thought and make it obedient. So in other words, there I am in the car. I am agitated. I feel like, why is she late? Take it captive. Make it obedient. Take it captive. Make it obedient. Ephesians 4, verse 26. In your anger, do not sin. So yes, I'm angry. Yes, Lisa might be angry about something that I did. Your spouse is angry. You're angry. In your anger, do not sin. Do not give the devil a foothold. Proverbs 29, verse 11. A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. A fool gives full vent to his anger. A fool says, I just have to get it out. And through that, hurt the marriage. Okay, so be self-controlled. So, I know who the enemy is. It's on my spouse. I've self-control. I didn't in the spur of the moment blurt something out. What's next? I need to get a godly perspective. In Psalm 127, verse 1, it says, unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. Unless the Lord builds the house, unless God is involved in trying to resolve this issue, you're going to do it in vain. So now what I need is I need to get a godly perspective. Before you take your issue to your spouse, first take it to God and wrestle it out with Him. What helps me when I pray through things and when I don't deal with it in the moment is it helps me to gain perspective. And it usually helps me to gain three perspectives. One is a perspective of myself. A perspective of that I am no prince or saint myself. And when I am before God, I realize, you know what, I'm made from dust, man. I'm a sinner. I blow it many times, and I need to have a bit more of a gracious demeanor and attitude about this infringement, about this thing that I'm unhappy about. Doesn't mean I don't bring it up. We're going to talk about it. But what it does, it gives me perspective. Number two, it gives me perspective on the situation. If you've at all been involved in marriage counseling, helping another couple, you would have seen this. And people have seen it in Lisa and myself when they counsel and help us. As a couple sits before us and they look like they're going to go at each other's throat about something absolutely minor. Minor. But when we're emotional, we're not able to be objective. So we are fighting about something. We're fighting about where the fridge in the kitchen should be. And you're thinking, does it matter where the fridge in the kitchen needs to be? Now, I'm sure for those of us that are married, you can think of stuff like that, where you lose complete objectivity. You get so caught up into the thing emotionally that you lose complete objectivity. And then we sit on the side and we look and say, geez, they're freaking out here about something really minor. I came when that started crystallizing for me. What I realized is I'm sure there are many times where people are sitting with my wife and myself and looking at us and saying, "Oy, oy, oy," you know, they're making such a big issue about something so small. And I realized that I need to gain perspective and objectivity about, is this really even an issue? Is it a life and death matter? So if it's not a life and death matter, again, it doesn't mean I shouldn't talk about it. It just means that maybe I should talk about it in a different way than what I'm intending to. The third thing that I want to get perspective on is my wife. That there's something that Lisa and I are different in many ways, but two things, or the one thing that we are absolutely alike in, is we both are sinners. We're both made from dust, and we both desperately fall short of the glory of God. In Psalm 103, verse 12, it says, As far as the east is from the west, so far as he, referring to God, removed our transgressions from us. As a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. For, listen to this, for he knows how we are formed. He remembers that we are dust. As what God does, as God looks at us and he says, you know what, I look at Eben and as far as the east is from the west, I remove his sin that far away from him. And the reason is, I remember the poor soul's made from dust. I mean, he's just a man. And so I don't treat him as he sins deserves because I remember he's just a man. It's funny. We have higher expectations from each other than what God has from us. We expect our spouses to be perfect, to walk on water. They need to be able to do it with one foot. Okay? And what helps me when I first take it to God, and I remember at this point of what I've said in the initiator's kit, I've not even spoken to my wife. I'm just gaining perspective. And the perspective that I'm gaining is, one, is I fall short from the glory of God. Two, the situation is not as big as what I originally thought it was. And three, my wife is also just a sinner. So what do I do now? And now we can start talking. Now, communicate your feelings in a loving way. So in other words, I feel hurt by what you did, neglected to do, said, neglected to say. So now I have remembered that you're not the enemy. I don't have to throw darts at you. You're not the enemy. I controlled myself in the situation. I'm not going to blast you out of the water. Okay. I took it to God. I'm gaining perspective. Now I want to communicate it in a loving way. Colossians 4 verse 6 says, let your conversations be always, always, big word that, eh? Always full of grace. 1 Corinthians 13, we all know this one. Love. Because I'm saying communicate it in a loving way, right? Love is patient. Love is kind. It's not proud. It's not rude. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. It always protects. Always trusts. Always hopes. Always perseveres. Love never fails. So as I'm thinking, okay, well, how am I going to communicate this to my spouse? I want to communicate it in a loving way. What does that mean? It means that my conversation needs to be full of grace. My conversation needs to be full of patience, kindness. It needs to be humble, not rude. And it needs to not be self-centered, not easily angered. I'm not going to bring up tons of stuff from the past. I'm going to make sure in the way that I communicate it that I protect my spouse, that I trust my spouse, that I have hope in my spouse, that I believe in my spouse, because I know that love never fails. So how does that translate? What does that mean? It means make what you want to say as easy to hear as possible. Communicate feeling as feeling and not as fact. Let me give you an example. I used the example of I'm in a car, I'm waiting. Now, while I'm sitting there, this is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, I'm asking a very small thing. Isn't it? Just be in the car. Wasn't a surprise. We knew we were going. We knew it for weeks that we were going, actually. So now this is now, I'm not talking to myself. I'm reasoning through this now by myself. And so I'm thinking, you know what? This is just disrespectful, isn't it? She doesn't respect me at all. At all. She doesn't care that I'm sitting here in the car revving the motor. So now she gets in the car. So now, without thinking through it and following any of these things, sweetie, I just realized that you just don't respect me. You just don't. You never do. We've spoken about this 10 times, and here we are once again at the same juncture because you don't respect me. And I'm tired of it. I'm tired of you not respecting me. Now, how easy is that to hear that? Now, that's one option. Option A, behind door A, behind door B. Sweetie. this is what I'll try and I'll say least. That's my least son. Sweetie, when, and again, we're not in the moment. That moment has passed. I've prayed through it. I'm sitting with Elsa, sweetie. You know, the other day, remember, I can barely remember it, but maybe you can. Okay, that part's not true. Okay. Remember the other day when we were going to the wedding and we were a little bit late and I was waiting in the car? Oh, yeah, not sure I remember that. Well, sweetie, I know you don't mean to disrespect me, but sometimes how it feels to me in that situation is that you don't respect me. Sometimes it feels to me that if you respected me, that you would have been on time or that it would have been important to you. Now, I'm not saying that it's not important to you, but that is how it often makes me feel. How do you feel? Isn't that a bit of a softer landing? So I'm expressing it as feeling. My feeling are not facts. I cannot know that my wife is disrespectful. Maybe she was distracted. How can I just label it disrespectful? But how she makes me feel, though, is she makes me feel disrespected. Let me play it the other way around for what happens to you from the other side. What would happen to us is I'm very singular focused, so I focus on what is ahead of me. And what would happen is we would, for instance, Anissa was going to share this, we would, for instance, have people come over for lunch or for dinner, and then Lisa feels like the house is not neat. Now, I don't necessarily always see the difference between neat and not neat. So I'm not aware of the problem. So what she is doing is she is sweeping and cleaning and what have you. I'm busy on my computer. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking that obviously if she needs my help, she will ask. But she is sweeping and she is sweeping. And obviously as she's sweeping, she's seeing me there on the floor and she's sweeping. Now, a way that she can communicate that is you never help around the house. I always need to beg you to do something. Why don't you just get off your butt for once in your life and actually do something? That's one way. Or there is, sweetie, remember the other day when you were peacefully in front of your computer and I was running around like a crazy person? Now, do you remember the other day when so-and-so came over for lunch? What it felt like to me, I felt like I was stressing out, and it felt like I had too much to do, and it felt like you didn't want to help me. That's how I felt. Now, I'm sure that that might not be the case. I'm sure that you might just have been distracted or didn't even notice, and I know that often you're not as aware of these things as I'm of them, but I felt hurt because I felt alone. I felt like things were left to me. But that was sort of how I felt. I mean, but how do you feel? Again, do you see the difference? Is he giving it as soft a landing as possible? So do not communicate feelings as fact. Communicate your feelings in a loving way. Okay, so let's run through that filter again. Initiator's kit. You want to bring up something, and bring up we must. Digging stuff under the carpet, no use. Okay, it's just at some point someone's going to stumble over it. Some point it's going to explode. We have to communicate. But when we communicate and when we bring up something that we're not happy with or some conflict situation, what do? Remember in my kit. I take out my kit and I say, man, remember who the enemy is. Okay, 2, be self-control and alert. You're losing it. This is not a good time to talk about it. You first need, it's goose far by. You first need to center yourself. Okay, get a godly perspective. Go to God. Vent with him. Get perspective on yourself, on the situation, on your spouse. And then figure out how to communicate it in a loving way. So yes, I'm thinking what I'm about to say in the spirit. And often 90% of the time it's the spirit and not even what you say, but how you say it. But is it, am I going to say it in a kind way? Am I going to say it in a self-righteous way, in a demeaning way, or would it be in a loving and a gracious way? So that's the initiator's kit. Now, secondly, you're now on the other side of this fence. And again, obviously, we keep on changing which side of the game we play. The responder's kit, in many ways, can look similar to the initiator's kit. And again, like I said, this might be in my kit. It doesn't have to be in yours. You need to figure out what needs to be in your kit. But a responder's kit, usually to have in the responder's kit, again, is you need to remember who the enemy is. Because what happens is, let's say your spouse that brought up something with you did not take out their initiator's kit. In other words, they viewed you as the enemy. There was no self-control. There was no godly perspective. And it certainly wasn't in a loving way. So when you're attacked, when we're attacked, what is our natural response? Defense. Okay, so I have to remember. Suddenly, I'm working on my computer. Suddenly, my wife is next to me, and she doesn't look so happy. I'm still typing away, and I can see this is not looking good. And let's say she goes for it. I mean, she lashes out. What is the first thing that I need to remember? Sitting on the other side, she's not the enemy. I can clearly see that Satan is at work. I can clearly see that Satan can use this situation to destroy our marriage or hurt our marriage badly in this moment. So I have to remember, she's obviously feeling emotional. She's feeling charged. She's obviously feeling hurt about something. But she is not the enemy. Believe me, I've had to sit in situations, either with her or with other people that I've been in conflict with, where I'm sitting and I'm smiling. All my thinking is, you're not the enemy. You're not the enemy. Yes, you are. No, you're not the enemy. No, you're not the enemy. But you have to train yourself to develop that kind of art. So, responder's kit, not the enemy. Number 2, humble yourself. Humble yourself. Philippians chapter 2, verse 5 talks about Jesus, and it says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. A couple of things we learn from this text. One is that Jesus had equality with God. He was with God before he came to earth. He had, the Bible talks also in the book of Hebrews, that God created the world, spoke the world into existence through Jesus. So he had power. He had authority. He had everything. Everything is under his submission. It says, but he did not consider equality with God, that strength, that power, those rights that he had, to be used to his own advantage. But rather he made himself nothing. The Greek says he emptied himself out and took on the very nature of a doulos, which is slave. He humbled himself. So in other words, again, my wife is coming, and if you know my wife, her nature is not at all to sort of hammer you, but just for illustrative purposes. She is sitting, she is attacking me, she is talking to me in a demeaning, disrespectful way. Not just because I'm a husband, just as a person. It is nasty. It is emotional. Do I deserve to be spoken to in that way? No, no one does. Okay? But when I humble myself, I choose to give up my rights of what I do or do not deserve. So if I think I have rights, I'm going to say, what's wrong with you? I don't deserve to be spoken to this way. I mean, yes, I did a couple of things, minor things, wrong. But look at you. Look at how you're acting. No, I'm saying I'm giving up that right. Because I'm not the focus. She is. And she has something on her heart that she wants to say. So, when someone brings up something, either in marriage or anything else, you're going to have to humble yourself. You're going to have to make yourself nothing. You're going to have to empty yourself out. This is not the time to bring up your issue. In other words, well, since we're talking about stuff, let's talk about your stuff. Or since we're talking about stuff, let's talk about how you always bring up stuff. Like, you ever done that? I certainly have. So, geez, sweetheart, I just don't know if this is good or what you're doing here. Okay, this doesn't seem very Christ-like to me, does it to you? Now, I need to humble myself and say, I have no right here. I have rights, but I'm saying that I'm making myself of no right, because what is important to me at this time is that my wife feels heard. And she cannot be heard while I think I have rights. She cannot be heard when I'm thinking about me. Because I will hear me. I will not hear her. So I have to humble myself. Hard, but you have to humble yourself. So conflict comes. Unexpected usually. Didn't see it coming for most men. Do you know how many times, and I'm starting to coach the guys in this, you know how many times that we've sat with a couple and we say, I say, how are you guys doing? And then the dude makes the mistake of speaking first. And saying, we're doing great. And I turned to my wife and said, how are you guys doing? So now I've said to men, guys, in general, we are very deceived. Always let your wife speak first. Okay, first give her an opportunity. So you can also gain perspective of reality. Okay, so usually men don't see it coming. You didn't see it coming. Remember, she's not the enemy, or he's not the enemy. Humble yourself. Seek to understand. Proverbs 20 verse 5 says, the purposes of man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws them out. One of the biggest things with conflict is we have a need to feel heard. So in other words, let's take my car scenario. Car scenario, I feel disrespected. So now, I am going to my wife, and what is my need? My need is to be heard. My need is to be heard that I didn't feel respected when you did that. How am I going to feel if she says, I know you're wrong. Of course I'm respecting you. Do I feel heard? Better yet, when we don't feel heard, what do? We either increase the intensity or the volume. So it's clearly they're not getting this. Maybe I didn't say it loud enough. Maybe I didn't make myself clear enough. So, okay, obviously you didn't get that. Let me just go at it again. So when I'm on the receiving end, my purpose should be, man, my desire is to understand you. My desire is to understand where it is that you're coming from and what it is that you're feeling. Now, this doesn't come naturally for me, but through God's grace and the help of my wife and many others, I've been able to grow more in it. This was at a stage, an absolute memory verse for me, is that understanding, and this is key, understanding does not equal agreement. So I can understand you without agreeing with you. But I don't even have to say that I don't agree with you. That's not the point. I can understand you. So in other words, empathy is, I can understand, let's say now we do the house cleaning thing. Lisa's cleaning the house, I'm sitting, I'm on the computer, I'm oblivious to anything that's happening. Did I mean to be evil? Did I sit there and think, you know, I'm getting some work done while she's sweeping the house? Did I think I'm hiding and she's not going to find me? Did I think that? Obviously, if I did, God help us. But in all honesty, 9.9 times out of 10, people are actually oblivious. We're oblivious to our actions. So I didn't mean that. So now she's coming and she's upset. Does she have the right to be upset? Did I mean any of that? No. But what is understandable is that she's feeling emotional. She's had a long day. The kids have been... on her the whole day. The meal is half cooked. The kids have messed up the house for the 10th time this day, which she's cleaned up 10 times before. And you know what? She snapped. It was just, it all became too much. Is it right to snap? Is it right to lose your temper? Is it right to be unfair? No, but is it understandable? Absolutely. And so what I'm trying to do is seeking to understand, seeking to acknowledge the feeling, seeking to understand the loneliness in the task, seeking to understand the feeling of a lack of respect. I'm just seeking to understand it. And so in my kit, I need to be able to say, I have no desire to be understood. It is not my place to be understood right now. Any issues that I have that this has sparked, I need to put in the back seat, and we will deal with this on another day. What matters right now is my spouse needs to be heard. Now, again, let me tell you from where I've come from, and then recently I shared with some brothers. I felt so proud of myself, but I'll tell you just now why. Because it's so not me. But what I would do historically is, let's say my wife does something, and again, I'm sure a few men can relate to this, but your wife comes to you and she says, you know, hey, sweetie, I just feel like you don't tell me enough that you love me, or I don't feel loved, or whatever. My natural response to that would be, as a man, is I would immediately think, but when else did I say that? I actually said it this morning. So you're actually wrong. Now, this is what runs through my mind. I'm not verbalizing this. But I'll say, but sweetie, didn't I say it this morning? Now that is timely. And that would lead to my death with that music and all. Am I seeking to understand? Am I hearing what she is saying? Is she saying that I don't say it enough, or is she actually saying that at this moment she doesn't feel loved? It's not necessarily even my fault. About a month or two ago, I was sitting on the computer. And now one of the things that I've worked on over the last year or so is on a daily basis telling my wife how much I love her and how awesome she is. So every morning when I wake up, and she wakes up, I'll say, man, oh, sweetie, man, you're just totally awesome, and the day is blessed by your arrival, basically. Not in those words, it's something more believable, but... and so she comes to me this day, I'm sitting on her computer, and she says to me, please tell me you love me. Now, I sit there. I must have most probably already told her this like 5 times that day. Now, through the speed of sound, it's going through my mind, processing. But didn't I say it this morning? Didn't I say this? Haven't I been working on this for a year? I yanked out the kit. You know what I said to her? I said to her, sweetie, I'm so sorry that you have to ask me to say it and that you don't feel it. I love you with all of my heart. I kept a straight face and I patted myself on the shoulder. And I honestly thought, I wish other men could see this right now. Because this is the light. Now, it took years of training for that one glorious moment. And I told her I was going to share this. And only today I actually told her that that's what happened in that moment. And she still appreciated me. Seeking to understand. That needs to be in the kit. seek to understand. Proverbs 16 verse 24 says, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Can you imagine how that response, which is not typical for me, so I'm not your own the story. Can you imagine how that response landed versus, but didn't I tell you this morning? Okay, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul, healing to the bones. Our last one in that kit. You have to bring about healing. So in other words, how do I, my spouse raised an issue, my spouse brought up something, how do I bring healing? That the conversation is not the end of it. That no, I need to go and think some more about it. So for instance, let's take the situation with Lisa's brought up with me historically a number of times that she doesn't feel like I'm helping around the house. And again, I'm completely oblivious to it. And so I realize, I'm going to have to pay attention to it. And so I have a list of accountability questions that I ask myself every morning. It's five questions with about three subheadings on each question. And one of the questions is this, is did I serve around the house yesterday? And I need to take it that serious because it doesn't, I'm just oblivious to it. I don't mean bad. I just don't think about it. And so I'm now more alert. So if I see anything lying around, man, I pick it up. If I see the kids throwing stuff around, I put it somewhere. You know, it's if I see dishes that have dried, I quickly put the dishes away. Because I want to be helpful. But I need to figure out how can I bring about healing? Whatever it is that your spouse has brought up, pray through it. Ask others about it. This is what happened with us. This is what my wife is feeling. This is what my husband is feeling. I want to be able to bring healing. What do you think would bring them healing? Ask your spouse themselves, what would bring healing for you? I'm so sorry that I've made you feel that way. I'm so sorry that you do not feel loved. I'm so sorry that you don't feel respected. I'm so sorry that you don't feel like we're intimate enough. I'm so sorry. I would love to bring healing. How do I bring that healing? That's the responder's kit. So, again, in a nutshell, someone brings up something with you. Again, spouse someone else. What do? Remember they're not the enemy. To make a decision to humble yourself, to empty yourself out, to give up your rights. 3, seek to understand. And 4, bring about healing. Now, in closing, some homework. Do you guys have a little pamphlet? Are we handing it out? Okay, the blue is for boys. Oh, anyone. Okay, well, it's just different colors. The blue is not for boys. It's blue and pink. Here is, can I have one just so that I, like what it is, it's got two little emergency kits on it. One says initiator and the other one says responder. Here's the homework. Here's what I want to encourage you to go and do. It's one per person. And you're going to have to listen carefully. This very simple thing can be confusing. And if you're not married, you can do it. If you're dating, do it with your girlfriend or your boyfriend. If you're single and you're not even dating, then just ask a friend about this, a close friend. But here's what you need to do. Sit with your spouse and first take the initiator kit and say, okay, here's what I've learned. Here's what I feel. I think when I initiate a possible conflict, here's what I think ought to be in my kit. I can resonate with what was said tonight, and I realize that I make you the enemy, and I know that in my kit should be remember who the enemy is. And so go through and say, okay, well, this is what I think, sweetie, should be in my kit. And then ask the vulnerable question. What do you think should be in my kit? As an initiator. When I initiate something, when I bring up something in you or with you, what do you think should be in my kit? That makes sense? Then you move to the responder kit because they do look different. And the responder kit, and you say, okay, well, man, just with what was said tonight, here's what I've realized, that when you've brought up things with me, I think what I need to have in my kit is that I need to seek to understand. I seek to be understood, and I realize that's not helping our relationship, our marriage, or what have you. So I think I need to write down here seek to understand. And you put down the different things that you think that you need to have in your kit ready. Because remember, here's the thing about the kit. You cannot start thinking about this in the moment. In the moment, it's too late. You're not Superman. You can't jump in a phone booth and you come out with your Superman suit. All humble and understanding. Okay? You need to prepare for it. So I need to know. I need to be prepared for it. I need to know what's in the kit. But anyway, so when I'm responding, sweetie, to something that you bring up, this is what I think should be in my kit. What do you think? What do you think of what I said? Is there anything that you would like to add that you feel like would really help us to resolve our conflict in a more gracious and loving and kind manner? And then obviously you switch around and the other spouse does it as well. I want to ask the men, lead in this. In other words, as you go home tonight, this is usually what happens. The wife sits and hopes. Please, honey, ask the questions. She's dying, man. It's burning, 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 burning. I want to ask the men, please, ask the questions first. Say, if not tonight, can we maybe grab some time tomorrow? Can we take an hour to do this? But let's ask each other these questions. And I believe that this is most probably something that our parents never told us about marriage. But I do think that this is something that when you resolve conflict in this way, you'll be closer together and more connected afterwards than what you were before. Amen. Let's close out with a word of prayer. Father, we thank you so much just for the guidance that you give us.